From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nicole Ogrisco with the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, December 30th, 2025. Now that some of the initial shock of the Custom House Wharf fire in Portland is wearing off, local business owners are figuring out what comes next. Harley Lewin of Nanuk Kayaks says the blaze caused catastrophic damage to his shop and to most of his tools, boats, and gear.
What has my life been like? Empty. My life and my day-in, day-out activities were largely, centered on kayaking, kayak business, kayak adventure, exploration, and the community that surrounds that on the wharf. And it, in a blink of an eye, is gone.
Lewin says his immediate priority is finding a temporary home for the shop so he can continue doing boat repairs and store the kayaks he already ordered for this season until the wharf is rebuilt. He says the outpouring of support from the community has been overwhelming, and he's hopeful that word of mouth will help him find new quarters. The city of Portland says its warming shelter was closed Saturday night despite temperatures below 15 degrees because of inadequate staffing. City Councilor Wes Pelletier says that's not acceptable.
We've been hearing from a lot of concerned constituents because they, I think, are very reasonably concerned that people are going to be dying out in the cold when our warming shelter should be open.
Pelletier says the council's Health and Human Services Committee will work with staff to bridge anticipated gaps in services and compensate for them. The new year kicks off an important signature gathering window for political candidates in Maine. Steve Missler has more.
Beginning January 1st, candidates running for federal, state, and county offices can begin collecting signatures to qualify for the June primary ballot. Each party candidate has to obtain a set number of signatures from registered voters, and that number varies by office. For example, party hopefuls running for the U.S. Senate and governor must gather 2,000 signatures to appear on the primary ballot, while those running for the U.S. House must collect 1,000 signatures. The thresholds are significantly lower for legislative and county office candidates. The deadline to turn in signatures is March 16th. Hitting that target will be easier for those who have built organizations and volunteer networks. Non-party candidates must also gather signatures to qualify for the November election. They have to obtain more signatures, and they have until June 1st to do it. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
The organization behind the Common Ground Country Fair says it will cut 6 staff positions to make up for losses in federal funding. The Maine Organic Farmers and Growers Association says it expects to lose more than $1 million in grant funding from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Executive Director Sarah Alexander says programs that support farmers markets, build climate change infrastructure, and help young farmers enter the industry are among those that will be affected.
We need everybody to keep the pressure on. We can't lose sight of the fact that we all rely on those programs and that they're very important. So we want to see them returned in the future.
MAFCA will continue all of its core programs, including the Common Ground Fair, organic certification, and the Maine Heritage Orchard, and step up fundraising efforts next year. Alexandra says staff layoffs were a last resort. For the last 20 years, Maine homeowners have received federal tax breaks to weatherize their houses and upgrade to more efficient heating systems. But congressional Republicans terminated those tax credits starting January 1st. Now home performance contractors are scrambling to assure confused customers that significant state-level incentives are still available. But they acknowledge that other market forces could slow Maine's momentum toward more energy-efficient homes and away from greenhouse gas pollution. Peter McGuire reports.
Elise Brown says it's a shame that energy efficiency became a political issue when it was wrapped up in President Donald Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Brown is executive vice president at Evergreen Home Performance, which serves customers with weatherization in the Midcoast and Portland areas.
Most people call us because they're cold, because their fuel bills are too high, or their energy, electrical bills are too high, and they're really looking for help so they can remain in their home.
The Energy Efficient Home Improvement Credit was created during the administration of George W. Bush. Brown says the federal income tax break helped pay for projects, but not as much as you might think.
The unfortunate thing about that is that for us, the federal tax credit could only ever be up to a value of $1,200.
On the other hand, state-level rebates for insulation from Efficiency Maine can be worth up to $8,000, depending on income level. Brown says the problem is many people think that the new federal law eliminated all incentives.
So that has had a real impact on us. That means that we're doing a lot to try to communicate with the public about the fact that the Efficiency Maine rebates are alive and well.
Almost a third of Maine's greenhouse gas pollution comes from heating systems in homes and businesses. To reduce those emissions, the state has pledged to weatherize tens of thousands of buildings by 2030 and to install 275,000 heat pumps over the next 2 years to switch away from burning fossil fuel heating oil. But Tim Adams, owner of EcoHeat, a heat pump company in Norway, says the loss of federal credits and other factors could stall those goals.
If it turns out that there are a few more factors come into play, like a bad economy next year, I think our industry is going to be disproportionately affected.
Soaring electric costs are making some customers question the affordability of heat pumps. And Adams says a federal mandate for heat pump manufacturers to switch to a less polluting refrigerant is causing a production backlog and a rise in costs.
So we've seen a significant spike in costs in all of our supplies, probably averaging at least 15 and probably closer to 30% in our costs. At the same time, the tax credits are going away.
At Efficiency Maine, Director Michael Stoddard acknowledges that policy changes and customer confusion are blunting momentum in the campaign to make homes more energy efficient.
And we're already seeing it. You know, we're getting fewer calls coming into us. We're processing fewer rebates in the last month or two. So it absolutely has an effect.
The change is uneven. Stoddard says home insulation is still pretty popular, while other rebates have fallen off. Stoddard adds that the downturn isn't cause for panic. His agency is still helping fund thousands of projects, but it might require a change in marketing strategy to remind the public about state rebates.
And Maine is continuing to do as well or better than any other state in the country when it comes to these kinds of home improvements and business improvements. So I'm still pretty optimistic that we're going to see a lot of activity.
Stoddard says there will be up years and down years in the quest for improving home efficiency in Maine. But it's important for people to take the long view and stay pointed in the right direction. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Peter McGuire.
Since it closed 3 decades ago, efforts to redevelop the former Loring Air Force Base in Limestone never quite got off the ground. But recently, new aviation and food processing ventures have brought signs of life. Business and municipal officials say Loring is finally rising toward its potential as an economic hub, but major hurdles remain. Ari Snyder reports.
We're going to go across Bravo onto Alpha and then onto the main runway.
On a bright November day, Jonathan Judkins, president of the Loring Development Authority, is barreling down a 12,000-foot runway in a pickup truck to a corner of the base that he says once held nuclear weapons and secure intelligence facilities.
And then that's a 3-story underground facility over there, too. It's pretty cool. It's a little creepy in the basement. It's very creepy in the basement.
Judkins swings the truck around and heads back toward the shuttered air traffic control tower past an airplane hangar the size of 3.5 football fields. A lot of work went into building this place, he says.
To sacrifice what we have and to throw it away would be a tragedy.
But one of Loring's drawbacks as a business hub is the very thing that made it a strategic asset for the U.S. military during the Cold War, its location. The base is far from population centers, but at one of the closest points to Europe in the continental U.S., as explained in a 1950s Air Force video.
Aroostook County is in the northernmost part of the state. I'm Tech Sergeant Don Butler.
During the Cold War, Loring was home to an arsenal of nuclear weapons, a fleet of enormous bomber planes, and at one point over 10,000 military and civilian personnel making the whole thing run.
The experience of just being out in this great North Country is something that you never forget. But the thing that impressed us the most were the people.
And those who served at Loring say it had every amenity, a grocery store, bowling alley.
Base library, base gymnasium, craft shops, hobby shop. I mean, it was a town. It literally was a town.
Retired Air Force Captain Ray Hildebrand was stationed here for 8 years in the 1970s and 80s.
Like living in a beehive. I mean, the activity, there was never a dull moment.
But when the base closed in 1994, the beehive was abandoned and the population of limestone cratered, from about 10,000 to less than 3,000 over a decade. And in the 30 years since, it's been a challenge to lure new businesses, other than two federal employers and a handful of smaller firms. But recently, there have been signs of change. At one edge of the base, construction crews are installing electrical systems, HVAC units, and other components inside the future Taste of Maine potato chip factory, which developer Jim Pelkey says will eventually employ up to 75 people. Pelkey grew up in limestone and says he's witnessed a lot of failed attempts to redevelop the base.
I think that it's a substantial start. Hopefully, in my lifetime, I'll be able to see that this gets several other people to come forth and invest money in Aroostook County.
And some already are. As of this summer, there's new activity inside an 86,000-square-foot hangar that once housed B-36 bombers.
So this is a 777 jet that's being retrofitted.
Jonathan Judkins is dwarfed by a Boeing passenger plane draped in a veil of painter's plastic sheeting, the first of many planes that aircraft maintenance firm Aero Intelligence plans to work on here. Judkins says it's one of Loring's newest tenants, drawn by the base's unique infrastructure.
There are only a few places in this world you can go and get a hangar like that.
Since Judkins took the helm of the authority in 2024, he's focused on attracting businesses in the timber, agriculture, and aerospace industries. There's talk of establishing an aviation mechanics program and a biofuels production plant. But he says there are still hurdles, such as securing federal funding for the transition of military bases to civilian use and addressing PFAS contamination under the runway. And not all the changes have been welcomed by the few dozen people who still live at Loring. Among them is Elaine Akerson, who relies on Social Security and says her water and sewer payments have increased some 300% since last year.
At the end of the month, if I have $200 in the bank, I'm lucky. And sometimes I have to skimp on my groceries in order to keep that amount.
Judkins says for years the authority heavily subsidized the water rates but can no longer afford to do so. The case is now before state regulators. Limestone town manager Ed Pocock says despite the challenges, a revived Loring is long overdue.
I mean, this town's been getting kicked in the teeth really for 30 plus years.
Soon, he says, the town will be bringing in much needed tax revenue from the potato chip plant and Aero Intelligence.
That's a huge amount of tax money this town has never seen before.
And he says other businesses considering a move to this part of the county shouldn't let the rural location scare them off, just as the Air Force urged Loring recruits some 70 years ago.
We found a special type of friendliness in these people in northern Maine. As we look back on it now, we wonder why we ever had any fears about coming here.
The hope this time around is that employers who decide to come here will stay for good. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Ari Snyder.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, Maine Public Radio News reporters reflect on the past year. I'm Nicole Ogrisco. Thanks for listening.